All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're excited that you're with us. If you're joining us on Facebook, we'd love for you to give us some hearts and some likes and share this video. We are trying a unique way to do this as Joe is chilling. Chilling, probably heating up. He is in Florida, sitting on the beach, enjoying some beautiful sunshine, 90-degree weather. I informed him I'm wearing a sweatshirt because it was 55 degrees this morning in Youngstown when I woke up. So awesome. Are you having fun, Joe, with the family?
Oh, heck yeah. There's only 1,400 miles that separate us, but you would see we're side by side as if we were sitting there together.
Yeah. So I know you went down and you stopped at the Space Coast. And so we got to talk about just for a few minutes before we get into where we're headed. You saw the all the space stuff. You got to go to, were you in Cape Canaveral? Where did you go? What'd you see? I know that's your sweet spot. You're going to go to Mars, I'm sure, at some point. And you're going to sign up to be one of the first people on this space tourism deal. You're going to outer space. So,
yeah, no doubt. So we stayed in Cape Canaveral. We had a campground down there. And then we hit Cape, we had Kennedy Space Center, and we toured, they got a great facility down there. It's sort of like a museum type of thing where they have the Apollo missions that they have laid out so you can learn the history of Apollo. And then they have the what they did with the space shuttle throughout history. And then they have a lot of the historical rockets set up there. It's really, you're right, it's completely in my wheelhouse. I was loving it completely.
How I saw a picture of you and Ryan. Did Ryan love it as much as you do, or does he love it because you love it?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know, but I think every kid, when it's presented the right way, like it really pushes on the limits of your thinking. And so, like if kids are, you know, I love the fact that the Kennedy. Look, we went there a couple of years ago, and it was like dead. There was nobody there. But since Blue Origin and SpaceX and you know, all of these people are participating again. The place was freaking packed, and it was young kids with, you know, I want to go to space t-shirts on, and I loved it.
Yeah, and it is. It's the ultimate frontier. It's that, you know, hey, we're going to the West. You know, we're willing to pioneer and break out and do something that nobody else will do. And I know from an entrepreneurial standpoint, that's a big deal. There's so much innovation that happens in our world, but not a lot of creation. A lot of people will build on other people's ideas. They'll try and be a better version of a different business that's already out there. And they'll tweak and they'll modify and try and find their niche. But really, when you get into the space stuff, what you're talking about is creation. Because we've never been there before. There's no one to model after. The path hasn't been made. And so so much of the stuff is fresh and new and exciting. Was there anything that you saw there that got your juices pumping, something you're going to print on the 3D printer when you get home, or a company you're going to start? Like what kind of, are you going to space with your own company?
See, it was a more personal thing. Like when you go through there and you look at all the, like the attitude and the inspiration that came from these people, how it was, you know, above themselves. And you know, they were willing to risk their lives to be able to pursue these things that were far-fetched. That inspired me because, you know, anybody when we were talking about ancient wars here, where people were giving their lives for something they believe bigger than them, that's sort of what I left there with, which, bigger than self type of feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Just watching, I showed my kids some of the videos of Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos both talking about it, the way they kind of approached it. I thought Richard Branson, anyway, kind of came across as, he was very emotional about it. It seemed very deep for him. Jeff Bezos, he was excited about it, but it kind of seemed like, hey, this was a fun hobby. Can't wait to do it again. Where Richard Branson was much more, it was visceral for him. Like you could tell, like, I've been dreaming about this since I was a kid, and here I am.
Yeah, you know when, like, we talked about, like, when you get to the end zone, and if you like spike the football and over celebrate, it's because you don't believe that you're ever going to be there again. I got that same feeling where it feels like, you know, Bezos feels like that this is going to be a regular thing, and Branson felt like this was like the pinnacle, like the, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. So when you're in that sphere for you, I know it drives the vision muscle a little bit and gets you kind of pumped and excited. You know, I know for me, when I get around inspiring stuff that gets my juices pumping, it's like, hey, like, let's go. Let's do the next thing. Let's follow through. It becomes the juice, the fuel to go to the next space. Do you find for yourself when you hit stuff like that, do you tank it away and carry it back with you? And how long does that fuel usually last?
Well, I'll tell you, each one of these trips, I get sort of like a message, and I never know going into it what it's going to be. If it's going to be like a larger than life, like way new existential type of stuff, or if it's like, you know, just a reinforcement of something I'm working on. So this one feels like a very personal, very like, characteristic type of theme. I'm only a couple days into it, so we'll see. But I have a feeling I'm already feeling sort of like, you know, motivated to get behind the personal approach of all of my enterprises.
Yeah, no, I totally get that feeling. And sometimes it's getting around the right people, going to the right, sure, you know, space like this and, you know, experiencing some new things. How do you share this? You know, I asked about Ryan earlier. How do you share that experience on the Space Coast there? I know you often post the live videos of the launches and you get excited about it. What seems to kind of pique his interest, and do you tend to throw fuel on his fire, or does he tend to throw more fuel on your fire, or is it reciprocated?
Yeah, both. You're right. It's a little bit reciprocated. I mentioned before, like when I was driving by one of the first times, I looked at all of the stuff and I thought, man, this costs, I couldn't afford any of this. Like I couldn't afford the door on the, you know, the big facility. So I always thought like all of that stuff was super out of reach for someone like me to even get and, you know, involved in it. I mean, it was more of an observer type of thing. So what I felt like we kind of did today was yesterday, the day before, we talked about like how we could participate, how we can get involved, how we can make like action happen that supports some of these things rather than just sitting back watching these things happen in front of us.
Yeah, I think when people look at a lot of that stuff, they go, oh, that's impossible. You know, you hear them say, oh, by the end of the decade, Elon Musk wants to put a base on the moon and start doing stuff on the moon. You know, he's talking about in the next 25 to 50 years having the potential of a colony on Mars. And there's so many people looking at that going, that's impossible. Like, why, you know, why should he do that? Isn't that a waste of, you know, you have all these armchair quarterbacks that are going to sit there and complain. Well, he steps out and does it. And that's kind of, that'll segue into where I want to go with our topic. I want to talk about doing the impossible. Because if you go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and we look at, you know, that World War II technology, the space race, all of that that came out of that, ultimately, you had a lot of people looking at the investments that NASA and others were making going, this is impossible. And you had people like JFK, hey, we're going to go to the moon. And, you know, yeah, you had exactly. These rousting speeches. And you had so many little kids, you know, playing with astronaut sets and all of that, hoping to one day, you know, aspiring to be these astronauts, to basically sit on, you know, a couple of tons of jet fuel and shoot yourself off and hoping you get back. You know, to me, when I look at that sort of stuff, it fizzled out after a while. What caused the spike to chase the impossible and then for it to fizzle and now rekindle? What kind of, because those things ebb and flow even for people personally. You know, you see the impossible and then you go out and you chase it. Maybe you achieve a little bit of it, you get a little taste, but then people kind of simmer down and then now we have this big kick.
Well, we went for a long time where we had like an attention span of like 30 minutes where we had to have something like started and finished within a 30-minute segment, or we'd lose interest or we'd get negative about it. So you have a lot of these, you know, really far reaching, you know, goals that are going to take more than one iteration in order to have any kind of success. If you were to look back even at like what Elon Musk did, I mean, he went through, you know, 2 years worth of failures before he got to a point where, you know, that he could even launch a rocket with any kind of stability. So I think that's where we're at right now. As long as we get a sense for we're making little strides, like little successes along the way. And since we've got three companies vying for it, I think we're going to get a healthy dose of getting little successes out of the way. So I think we're on the upswing. I think that, you know, especially people getting involved now, kids getting involved now, will have lots of stuff, you know, road ahead of them to get involved in.
What do you think is the cause for a lot of people when they see an impossible thing like that, or they hear somebody with the audacity of an Elon Musk to say, hey, we're going to put a base on the moon in 10 years. There's this wave of reaction and repulsion to this space tourism. You know, they could be spending, I've seen the memes already, you know, they could be spending their money on, you know, so many better things. We could, you know, cure poverty. We could do all this stuff. You know, even Jeff Bezos's comment, you know, where he thanked all the Amazon purchasers and stuff. You know, it probably could have been presented better. But at the end of the day, like, he earned that money. If you don't like him, go buy your product somewhere else. And he can spend his money however he wants to spend his money. If he wants to spend it going to space, I think that's really great for him, really great for humanity. I think it pushes the envelope. But so many people, rather than tackling their own impossible, would rather tear down somebody else's attempts. Why do you think that is?
Well, see, we're hitting that, you know, that curve where you have the early adopters and then you get into like the laggards. Well, as soon as you started getting influence over the laggards, that's when you get the negativity. So it feels like that extra criticism is a bad thing, but we're having influence over that last remaining, like last ditch effort. So those are the last people that conform, and which means that when you have, you know, full acceptance, then that's when the really big stuff can happen. So feels negative, but in the reality, it's probably one of the better, you know, better things.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when you're getting the criticism, for me, I try and turn that into fuel to keep pressing, because I know that breakthrough is just around the corner. You know, when people look at their own impossible situations, whether that's, you know, financially, whether that's something with a company, whether that's a diagnosis from the doctor, you know, you can really attack it only really one of two ways. You can either step up and do everything you can to defeat it and to come up with a solution or to push the ball forward, or you can sit back and critique everybody else who thinks they have a solution. You know, I think often, you know, some folks that, you know, have gotten diagnosed with inoperable cancers, and then they go on to find a diet, or they go on to find some sort of supplement that cures their strain of cancer, because they get obsessed about it. And everybody says, well, it's impossible. You got a diagnosis, you're going to die. And they say, well, bump that. Every day from here till I'm in the ground, I'm going to figure out a way to defeat this. And then when they do, people are like, I can't believe they did that. It's the same thing when you look at, you know, some of these companies. You and I often joke about the 20-year overnight successes. Exactly. You know, everybody looks at them and they're like, oh, you know, they got so successful. I can't believe they did that. You know, just everything fell their way this year. And I'm like, they've been plugging away in the negative and trying to figure this thing out for the last 20 years. It just all happened to click this year. But in previous years, you wouldn't have been saying that. You didn't know who they were. And so is it more the persistence that matters when it comes to the impossible, or is it the right makeup? You know, you just have to strike gold, if you will.
Yeah. And it's that persistence, and it's also that intensity. When those people who get that idea in their head, and no matter what the criticisms are, they can't be talked out of it. You know, if you go beyond that 30 minutes of attention span, then the people who would criticize you, they lose the energy to keep criticizing you, and you win kind of by default.
Yeah, no, and that totally makes sense. I know when I look at the things that in my life, the goals that I've set and some of the things that it's persistent that, you know, people look at and go, wow, I can't believe you did that. Or I can't believe you've had success with this. And I'm like, well, you know, it didn't just happen today. I've been persistent for the last 10 years, the last 15 years. And I failed a whole bunch leading up to it, you know, kind of like Edison with the light bulb. I forget, the reporter asked him something along the lines of, you know, how does it feel to have failed to create the light bulb 1,000 times? He'd used so many different elements. He goes, I didn't fail 1,000 times. I just learned 1,000 different ways not to make a light bulb. And it's all that perspective in that sense. So persistence, you and I talk about moving that ball 1 yard at a time. As we look at some of the impossible things facing our culture right now, you know, when I think of things like the opioid epidemic, like everybody looks at that and says, that's impossible. Like, you're never going to have zero deaths in that column. And I want to say, like, well, it may look impossible, but what if we were persistent for the next 20 years? What if we said, yeah, we're going to take some licks on the chin. We're going to get burned. Some people are going to say yes, and they're going to let us down. But what if we just consistently chip away at that? Or we could talk about, you know, poverty, or we could talk about some of these big items that seem insurmountable and become political talking points. But in actuality, it's when everyday people like you and me and like our listeners decide, hey, I'm going to take a little bit of persistence, a little bit of intensity, and I'm going to chip away at my edge of the world. And if we get everybody chipping away with a little bit of persistence and a little bit of intensity, we're going to see the world shift.
Yeah. And like, if you surround yourself by people who were suggesting, like, you have a good support system and you don't really need acknowledgement to be able to persist. I mean, a lot of people like do something and they look around to see if anybody will give them acknowledgement for it. But if you could like do it anyway, regardless if anybody's with you or against you, and keep doing it, that's like the definition of persistence. It's not like keep doing it when it's easy. It's like keep doing it when it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and that's always the difficult part. That's the challenge in weight loss and going to the gym. That's the challenge in anything. It's easy when it's fun and everything's clicking and it feels good. And you know, it's the first couple weeks. It's hard when, you know, it's March. Everybody likes to make the New Year's resolutions in January. It's hard when, you know, you get injured. It's hard when you have those setbacks. And I think, you know, when people think of the impossible and they think of, you know, going to space, something like that, you know, for Elon Musk and for some of these guys, you know, this dream started however long ago, and they've been building and building and building and testing rockets and hiring people, and they've invested millions of dollars into this venture to send them to space for 10 minutes. But and everybody's looking at it going, oh wow, he sent himself to space for 10 minutes. But these guys are thinking down the road here of people living on the moon and Mars and some of the stuff that just 25 or 40 years ago was science fiction, like in every sense of the word. And they looked at it and said, you know what? We're just going to be persistent. We're going to try that rocket. We're going to have it land back. It's not going to need a parachute. We're going to put it, you know, and they just were persistent, and they increased that intensity. And now we'll look at them and say, oh, what successes they were, when in actuality, everybody was a bunch of naysayers for a long time. But we'll get on the bandwagon when they're successful.
Yeah. And when you're living that far in the future, when you've already sort of like pictured the opioid epidemic and being, you know, kept in check or having some solution for it. But you today's Chris talking about stuff that, you know, we're dealing with today. Well, you're living in a time period that's way ahead of them. So it's harder to hear those voices.
Yeah. And you almost have to start living there before you live there. Like they have to start before a base is ever on the moon. They have to be on the moon. I don't know if that, that makes sense to our viewers, but it's putting yourself in that spot. Whether through vision, whether through preparation, whether through, you know, you have to prepare for the thing you're praying for, to use a spiritual term in that sense. Because you can, I always say it this way, that a dream hopes to, a vision plans to. And so you can dream all you want about going to the stars, but if you have a vision, you're putting a plan in place and you're preparing as if that's a reality.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the visionaries have already always struggled with that, where, you know, because it's not being done, if you basically would say something that is hard to picture, then that's like the first criticism that comes about is telling you that, hey, that's impossible, dude. Why don't you get off of that? But the true visionaries stick in there, and no matter what's said to them, they stick to that vision because they've already kind of lived it through, you know, in their own mind.
Yeah. And I think that people don't value, like they look at an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos, one of these guys, and they go, oh, well, they're just rich and they're able to do it. They're just, you know, they'll lump it in whatever category gives them an excuse to not pursue the impossible for themselves. And so, oh, well, they're just this, they're a billionaire, they're whatever. And so therefore, I don't have to achieve my impossible because I can't possibly connect with them. And that's just a cop out for you to sit and do nothing. You know, and it also, it's really not being fair to them when you think of the risk that they put up or the way that they've persisted over all this time, the way they've learned. I wonder what would have happened had one of the launches not been successful or, God forbid, tragic. How do you think those type of men would respond to a setback like that. Had a rocket, God forbid, exploded, or had you know, something malfunctioned and it not gone the way they wanted it to, how would they have responded?
Yeah, see, I think the public would have been super quick to see, like, say, like, I told you so. And I think Bezos and the other guy with his name anyway. But I think Elon is different in that respect. I don't think that would have dissuaded him at all from doing anything. I don't think public opinion is much on his radar. But I got a question for you. Like, you know, I think pretty critical, like when we were in, you know, in high school, if we were asked the question, like, if you had $1 billion, what would Doug Reed do? Like, you know, I'm going to pose that to you. Like, if you had $1 billion, Doug Reed, what would you do?
If you gave me $1 billion?
Yes.
Yeah, that's super easy. Sam and I talk about this all the time. First of all, we have our, you know, personal strategy. We'd be in financial freedom and we'd take care of our family. But then you have huge opportunities to make investments, to start companies, to I would not. So here's the, I say this, and this is not cliche. I don't ever want to retire. I don't think retirement is something that we've been set up to do as humans. I think one of the reasons people die early is because they retire. Now, I'm not saying that I should be in a position where I have to work, but I always want to be operating and functioning in my purpose. And so whether that's at 80 or 60 or 90, I don't want to set my life up in such a way. And you often hear people, oh, I'll hand you $1 million or $1 billion or whatever. Like, well, I want to set it up so that you know, I can just sip mojitos, you know, on the beach. Hey, sure, would I get to do some travel that maybe I wouldn't otherwise? Yeah, but I can't think of a worse purposeless existence than just going from golf course, beach to beach and stuff like that. And some people listening to this are like, oh, well, that's because he doesn't have. No, I'm telling you, there's something in the fabric of human beings where we want to contribute something of significance and we want to leave a legacy. And when you take that out of the mix and you're just living for the next, you know, party or the next thing, it's empty. And it really saps life of its energy. So, I mean, I would take that type of money and I would get really smart people around me and figure out how we could really change the world with it. Start some companies, launch into some stuff, give some to some organizations that are tearing it up and doing great stuff already and get to be a part of changing the world. I would just take what I do already and it would give me different cards to play in the game.
Yeah. I don't think there's, you know, those three guys, Branson, Bezos and Musk, you know, you give them $1 billion and I don't think it's by happenstance that they all chose sort of like space as their frontier. I think everybody gets in that existential space and say, okay, well, now I have the chance to change humanity's, you know, trajectory. What can I do? Like, where's my wheelhouse? And, you know, I kind of can picture you with $1 billion in your wallet and all the lives that you would change. And, you know, some people might go the humanistic approach. Someone be the technology. Someone would be the, you know, space is the frontier, oceans, whatever your wheelhouse would be. But I think all of us should sort of like make sure that our kids are asked that question, not with a like far-fetched, that'll never happen to you. But I think all of us need to start dreaming about if we were in that position, how we would tackle it.
So all this conversation on the impossible and perseverance reminds me of a scripture that I'm going to read to you, Joe. Go ahead.
I'll hit it. Somebody's
got your button. He's ready.
Yes.
In the book of James, I'm going to read a couple of verses here. In the book of James, it says, starting in verse 3, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And you and I talk about faith quite a bit and believing for the things in front of us. But it's the testing of our faith that produces perseverance. It's when those doubts come in, those setbacks, that sort of stuff. It produces perseverance. And then verse 4 says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God who gives generously without finding fault. And I love that kind of concept that our faith is tested, but the testing of our faith produces perseverance, and that perseverance is going to finish its work. I'm going to get things out of persevering that I can't get any other way. And too many people short circuit their process by not continuing to push in. They get out when it gets tough and their faith was tested. Oh, I'd really like for that to happen. But then here comes the test. Here comes, the doubt. Here comes the insecurity. Here comes the setback. And we pull out rather than continuing to press in. And the good stuff is just on the other side of that, because that perseverance is going to cause me to grow in ways that I never could have otherwise. And it's going to cause my situations, the scenarios around me, to grow as well. I really think that for a lot of our viewers, and listeners, you need to understand that as you're facing that impossible situation, don't back out just because it gets hard or just because the odds keep stacking up against you. That's the time to double down and to push through, because on the other side of that is going to be growth and stuff that you never dreamed possible.
Yeah, and I think you and I set up this culture where we can be embracing of that kind of behavior. And, if somebody has some confidence, if they go out there, put themselves out on the line, and then if they come up short, it's one of those things where the culture rallies around them and gives them confidence for the next time around. I think we're doing a good thing here with driving towards that confidence level in our spheres of influence.
Yeah, and it's super huge that when you have a failure, you get back on the horse. Too many people fall off the horse and they don't get back on, and then they're terrified. Well, I can't do that again. I tried to start a business one time. We tried to have a rental property one time. We tried to do that thing and we got bit by it. It didn't work. And so then we never get back on the horse, and we spend our whole life wondering what it's like to ride a horse, when in actuality, you just got to climb yourself back up there, and you may get thrown off one or two more times. But the joy of riding it and the joy of the ride is worth the potential of getting thrown off. And too many people aren't willing to, not know that it's going to succeed.
Yeah, I asked a question before about like how quick the regular people are quick to like throw you under the bus and give up and show you that, it shouldn't have been done or couldn't have been done. And, fighting that in our culture is saying that, hey, there's just people that are pushing on long odds that if you rally behind them and you keep them in the game, chances are that they're going to succeed are pretty good if given enough time.
Yeah. And, I just think for most people, the rub is, I don't want to look this way. I don't want to be a failure. It's worrying more about culture and what everybody else thinks. When in actuality, if you're willing to eat ramen noodles and, figure it out, you can pretty much do anything. And too many people aren't willing, and they don't have the grit to get down into it. If their talent doesn't take them to a certain place, they're gonna this is too hard, and you're gonna have to dig. You're gonna have to find another space in yourself to go to that level. I had a mentor that said to me one time. He said, "If you could do anything and you knew it wouldn't fail, what would you do?" And my response was almost immediate. And he looked at me and he said, "You're a coward if you don't do it." And I was boom. Like, oh, because you put out this huge dream that you can sit and you can write notes about and you can speculate about and you can sit around on couches and talk about and you can watch YouTube videos about. But it's until you put rubber to the road and really start making those 1 yard increments towards your goal, you're just really a coward and you haven't taken a shot.
Yeah, I don't
Sorry
think people realize
if there's a viewer out there, a listener, it's like
I don't think people realize how powerful that criticism is, that when you have a vulnerable idea and you're already under the pressures of failure for succeeding, and then that, general audience gives you their opinion about what it is that you're doing with really no skin in the game whatsoever, how much that weighs on most people. And you're right that given the wrong timing of that, they could bail on it and not even continue.
Yeah, my hope and prayer for our listeners and viewers is that you would go out and tackle impossible stuff. I don't just want to talk so that you make an extra $1,000 this year, or you tried, at the end of the day, like, we have some big things in our culture that need people to tackle them, that aren't worried about what their neighbors think. They're not worried about what the paycheck is at the end of the day, that they're driven by raw passion and just genuinely wanting to see the world change. And those type of people go to space. I mean, that's bottom line.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're doing a really good thing here, Doug. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have family and you got beach and sunshine. What's on the agenda for the rest of the trip?
You know what? We haven't really gone into the ocean yet. It's kind of a sin that I've been around the ocean. I haven't been in there. So I think tomorrow we're going to do some jet skiing, and then we're going to hit the beach pretty hard the next couple days.
Nice, nice. I'll be here in Youngstown. I don't know if you realize this, but it's going to rain again. It's been raining like cats and dogs here as well. But enjoy your family. Enjoy your time away. And hopefully next week we'll be able to do this again. And when my voice is back fully, we'll go for a full show. But I'm starting to wear thin here. So
beautiful.
Enjoy your wife and kiddo, and enjoy the sunshine for all of us here in Youngstown.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it, bud.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your